Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth. And I'd like to ask you, how often do you have mystical experiences? Maybe they're constant. Maybe life is just a mystery and we know it. It's about being aware. How self-conscious are we of our consciousness? And we need to, I think, learn more about it. I'm always looking to understand our process, our mental process, better. And to do that, I've asked a previous guest to come back again. She has a new book that she's been developing. And we're going to talk about mystical experiences and how it all comes together, the knowledge about mysticism and the history of it, and what we can know about ourselves because we understand the process better. And the new book is called Tantric Psychophysics. I love that title. And to help us understand what that title means and what's in this book is the author, Shelley Joy. Shelley, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Hey, I'm so glad to be back. This is the first interview since the good old pandemic broke out.
Yeah, I know we've been all dealing with that. And what's interesting is that you have escaped to the northern woods of Northern California. And hopefully, you know, it was a safe place to be. I know it's getting safer there because the population is so small.
Yeah, I live in Shasta County, close to Mount Lassen National Park. There's about 10 volcanoes around here. And I escaped up here to from Oakland, California, where I was worried about earthquakes. We were right on top of a fault, the Hayward Fault. So I escaped up here 8 years ago. And a month after I moved, we got evacuated because of a forest fire. And I thought, oh, shush, I didn't think of forest fires. It's a really isolated place, beautiful up in the mountains. And Shasta County has only had, well, they have 50 virus cases thus far only. And they've had like 10 in the last week since they opened up. But we're pretty safe. I always wear a mask and even goggles and gloves when I go down to the grocery store. And all the locals look at us strangely because nobody up here wears masks. No one in Redding or the whole county. They're a little bit laid back. I hope it just goes away eventually and we get a vaccine or something. Anyway, it's a great place to meditate. And I've grown to be a hermit anyways up here. So it hasn't been a problem social distancing at all. I have a green macaw and a black cat and 8 chickens and my wife, Suzanne. And we're quite happy. We have a family of deer that live on the property, about 8 deer. And we feed them apples at sunset. They come around for chunks of apples. And so our life is going on as pretty much as it was. Although I've lost a lot of sleep in the last few months. Somehow I've had really hard time sleeping. I guess low-level anxiety from the pandemic. And,
right.
You know, I guess we all have. And strange dreams. People have had strange dreams during this pandemic. You know, every now and then you see something in the news. Oh, people are having weird dreams. Well, I think it has to do with the change of consciousness.
Right.
And I really think this whole experience collectively with 7 billion people is actually helping evolve our consciousness in ways we will soon maybe be able to perceive better.
Yes, I think so. And I just want to mention briefly, because we're going to do a show in the future about a subject matter you're very familiar with, a mysticism subject matter.
Right.
Because you mentioned your wife, Suzanne, but you didn't mention that Suzanne has a wife.
And yeah, so, she has a wife too, and that happens to be me.
Right. And so you have an unusual relationship because you are both transgender.
Yes, that's true.
And we're going to do a show coming up soon about transgender mysticism because there's so much history about transgenderism, and it's amazing how part of life it was in ancient times that people don't realize. And so we're going to talk about so much of what it all means. And to me, you're very fascinating to me because you've experienced both genders in your life. And that adds to understanding consciousness better, I think.
Yeah, it's quite a motivator, you know, for me at least it was.
Yes. And but you have a long history of being a very interesting person in the world. And we'll talk about that, I guess, more in the future. Because right now, we really want to look at your new book, Tantric Psychophysics, and understand what you're bringing to the world. Because you explore consciousness constantly. You're very busy with being someone who can share with us deep understandings of life and our mental awareness. It's not our necessarily a mental process of the mind so much as it's who is it that's awakened us and how is it experiencing itself.
Exactly. You've got it. Yeah. You don't need me.
Well, thank you. No, but you are so skilled at all of this history and understanding of these deep concepts. And so this book brings back a lot of history of consciousness study. And even like in ancient times, they didn't know the word consciousness. They just knew the word spirit. So especially religious masters, there were many brilliant masters in the religious movements of different religions in history that understood spirit and spirituality, which we know really as an aspect of consciousness. And so there's a long history. And especially in India, we're going to talk about your knowledge of Patanjali and thousands of years ago, who wrote how to experience consciousness in many ways in life, to explore it and to understand it in ourselves.
Well, you know, the mystics were really the scientists of consciousness. Whereas our scientists these days are more the scientists of materialism, of matter and time and space. Whereas the mystics and the saints in our traditions were equally as intelligent, I'm sure, as our modern scientists. But they chose to focus on what they thought was more important, which was primary, which was consciousness, the fact that we are aware that, you know, that's all that we can really, you know, everything else might be an illusion, but I don't think our self-awareness is an illusion because we feel it every moment that we're awake.
We're seeing it too when we look out through our eyes. All our senses actually experience it. It's the experience that isn't understood. We can describe what we experience in our senses, but we can't describe having them. Is that true?
Yes, definitely true. And I've been in the last 10 years really focusing on contemporary consciousness studies and reading a lot of modern approaches to it by scientists and psychologists. And they really are still, there's such a gap in understanding. They really don't know, you know, what is the origin of the awareness that is behind our eyes? What is it that's looking out of our eyes? And what is it that feels, you know, tastes sugar and feels love? They have no idea, although they're starting to suspect that it has something to do with quantum theory and very, very small high energy dimensions. And that's pretty much the subject of most of my books I've written lately.
In your book, there's a quote here. We're not the person we think we are. We're the universe looking out from a particular perspective in time and space, observing and interacting with itself.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult to try to explain this this whole thing because one of the problems we don't have good words for it. There aren't many words, and scientists, when they start talking about it, they use words the average person doesn't understand because they're maybe technical words, you know, like synaresis and systasis, which we might talk about in a few minutes. But what it is another way of looking at it to me that maybe simplifies it is, it has to, like Carl Jung, he wrote extensively about the little self with a small s and the big self with a capital S. The big self, there's one self, there's one I. We are one person that is the universe, but we look out from different perspectives, and each one of our little human beings and ants and even the viruses, they're ways of our one self interacting and looking out onto the universe. So that which we think we see with our eyes is actually being seen by the one self, you know, by what many people call God, the Hindus call Brahman, I guess the Chinese would call it the Tao. There's a oneness to the universe. And one of the most greatest modern physicists, David Bohm, focused upon that. He wrote a book called Wholeness and the Implicate Order. And he tried to, unlike most scientists who try to divide things up and analyze things and look at smaller and smaller portions of material things, Bohm was trying to understand the whole universe. And I think Einstein also was trying to do that. In fact, they were both good friends. They were actually, they lived in the same apartment building in Princeton for a while. And of course, Bohm was much younger. He was the young, 30 years younger than Einstein. And they both were interested in trying to understand how the entire universe was connected into one thing. So when you come down to consciousness, that one thing is an awareness, the awareness of God looking through each one of us. And each one of us is just left with the illusion that we're separate. And we're really not separate. We're connected to everything.
Yeah, and we're that implicate universe experiencing itself explicitly. Did I say that right? Explicitly.
Yeah, we're like a Zoom, you know, like Zoom with everybody on the same Zoom page, looking out and trying to understand things. And so that's why, actually, after I got my engineering degree, I started, because I had experienced LSD and mushrooms and a few, you know.
Like the old days.
Right? That was back in 1968, 67. You know, those times feel very much like now. It's almost like we've had a 50-year revolution and come back to where we were, where society is undergoing a major transformation.
And we need to explore, you know, because things haven't been working out. Just like in the 60s, coming out of the 50s, things were very stuck. And like,
well, there was a lot of creativity, but also society was stuck with the Vietnam War and corporations and greed. And, and young people were looking for sort of a revolution in human values and in society. And that's pretty much what's happening now. I don't think this whole pandemic catalyst is going to be seen eventually as a really bad thing. It brings a lot of grief and sadness with so many people getting sick and dying. But in terms of the impact on our society, on our planet, on our culture, I think it's an enormous awakening. It might be.
And the opportunity is because of the internet and information flowing so fast that.
Yeah, the brain has speeded up, the global brain. And we're starting to wake up and integrate and transform. You can just feel it in the air. And I think we're just coming out of being despairing about it all to starting to get a glimmer of hope, you know. Look at what the Supreme Court did the last day or two, you know.
I love it.
Oh, my God. DACA, it was totally revived, you know. The Trump administration was trying to suppress gays and suppress, dreamers.
Right.
The Supreme Court is coming out and suddenly we're getting our freedoms back and our hope and our humanity. So pretty excited. But maybe we should get back to talking about Tantric Psychophysics, my new book.
Well, right, because it's the opportunity to reconcile physics and metaphysics.
And yeah, for sure. You know,
that's what, let's call that systasis. We're merging all these different fields of knowledge together. And you have a list here that I was very excited to see of different things that you wanted to bring together, an integral focus on consciousness. And I'm just going to run through them quickly, and then we can look at and understand them. First is consciousness studies, which is what we're doing, really. Second is electrical engineering, and you'll have to, you know, since you're an electrical engineer, you understand how that fits in here. We'll talk about that. I think it has to do with electromagnetic energy as well. And then dimensional analysis, speculative philosophy, quantum theory, math, geophysics, and human physiology. And the human physiology is very important because that has to do with, for instance, the practice of yoga and how energy moves through our bodies.
Definitely.
So let me ask you about electrical engineering and how you feel that fits, since you're so close to that.
So ask.
Yeah, no, I just did.
You know what you're talking about. You know, okay. Let me just give me a 3-minute introduction here to Tantra. Why Tantra? And, you know, for decades, actually, literally, I was almost embarrassed to write about it because the view of Tantra, that word in the West, especially California, is that it's a sex thing. You know, it's like, oh, Tantra is weird sex and it looks like fun and it's maybe deviant, God knows. But here's how I learned about Tantra. I was, after taking my psychedelics, you know, for about a year and finishing my engineering degree, I didn't want to do normal engineering, normal being, you know, designing radar systems and radios and things. I wanted to understand consciousness. I actually wanted to go for a PhD to be able to do research on consciousness. So, but I got really, the only place I could find teachings about consciousness, aside from maybe Carl Jung and William James, most of it was came through Asian philosophies and Asian religions, and especially Indian, Vedantic and yoga. I mean, I started practicing yoga in New York, and not just the Hatha yoga, but actually trying to meditate. You know, first it was a disaster. I couldn't be quiet for 5 minutes in the dark, you know, without my mind starting to race. But the more you practice something, the better you get at it. Eventually, I went to India, and when I stepped off the plane in Madras, it's now called Chennai, it's in South India, a pretty large city, I was met with a statue. You know, when you're deplaning, you're going through these corridors, and sometimes they have art and statues. This statue was Shiva Shakti. It was half woman and half man. The right half was all a man, looked like a man with a partial beard. And the left hand had earrings and a musical instrument. And, you know, me being a secret transgender person, nobody in the world knew my secret even at that point. I thought, my God, what kind of statue is that? And so I started exploring these things, and I learned that Tantra, one of the main objectives of Tantra, is to merge and fuse and integrate male and female, the male and female energies in the universe and within your individual person. And I thought, aha, this looks like it's, you know, something that makes sense given my predicament.
Right, to you, it makes more sense than to most.
Yeah, I thought, oh my goodness. So I started, and you know, I thought Tantra was just weird sex from what I had read in California earlier, but I started actually reading some serious books about it from Sir John Woodruff. Some of the best books were written over 100 years ago. He was a chief justice of the Supreme Court in India under the Raj. He was British, of course, back then, in the early part of last century. And he, a very brilliant man, he also became fascinated by Tantra because he wrote a book called The Serpent Power. He wrote a lot of other books too. He learned Sanskrit so that he could understand it better, as did I. I went back for a master's degree and studied Sanskrit so I could try to understand the texts. And very few engineers or lawyers, Supreme Court justices, would do that. And so I was very fascinated with his books and read them carefully. And the idea is that there's a male and female energy in the universe. And we see it in our culture, male and female. But that, and it caused this dualism, allows the universe to see itself. You know, if you don't have a light and dark shadows, you know, you have to have this, at least a dualistic difference in order to perceive. And so if the universe is oneself wanting to perceive itself and have fun, perhaps, that's something people don't much talk about, God having fun, you know, he looks kind of serious up there, but I think God really enjoys gaming and we're part of the game. It's almost like every human is part of a different channel and, you know, God probably channel surfs through all of us.
I like that.
And think of all the wide variety of tragedies and comedies and unusual situations that we're providing entertainment for God for. So anyway, Tantra, it turned out, is the more I learned about it, was one of the basic things in Tantra is trying to use what works. They try different things in the scientific method, you might say, but in trying to explore consciousness and gain mastery over it, and maybe gain secret powers, which they call siddhis in Sanskrit, powers or accomplishments, they tried everything. And they would discover what works and then keep that. And so this Tantra, kind of the word itself means sort of a weaving or a loom in which you bring in different threads of understanding and different threads of things that work and weave them together into something that gives you a powerful tools into exploring and developing consciousness. And one of those tools is entheogens or drugs. So tantrics are explored drugs from a very early time. Of course, all religions talk about drugs, even Christianity. You know, when you take the body and blood of Christ, supposedly the blood, it's a sort of an intoxicating thing because it's wine. Wine is something that always has changed consciousness. And then in the Vedas, they took soma. Soma was some kind of a mushroom concoction, maybe with bhang, which is cannabis, that would change your consciousness. So Tantra also used sex, the actual act of experiencing sexual consciousness. They refined that into rituals in which they would try to maintain just a slightly threshold, just slightly below orgasm as long as possible. And just try to meditate while on the threshold of incredible those feelings that we all probably know and enjoy at times. And the other thing is Tantra was actually, it was condemned by a lot of people in India when it sort of grew up about 1400 years ago, because it was very inclusive. It included men and women. Women were allowed to be tantric priests. And it also included lower castes, the Shudras. You know, the Indians had a very rigid caste system, and Brahmins were supposed to be the only spiritual leaders. But the tantrics, they would go out into the graveyards at midnight and take drugs and have orgies and try to explore consciousness. And I thought, well, that sounds pretty damn exciting. Right. And, you know, and so I wanted to study it more rigorously because I've always been a nerd who likes to study things from books. And I found out there was a university or college in San Francisco. I was living in New York at the time in the Lower East Side. It was called the California Institute of Asian Studies. And they had their teachers were all had degrees, like PhDs mostly, some masters, but mostly PhDs. But they also were practitioners of different schools of meditation and mysticism.
They were also exploring consciousness. But we're starting to get near the end of the show.
Oh, sorry. You maybe want to ask me.
I love listening to you. But we're going to have, we'll do more.
And, yeah, I think we
it's
should.
It's exciting to, you know, to understand the tantric principle of integration of the yin and the yang principles and how they show up in life and how we can use them in our lives.
Well, how it affected me was I learned, I became fascinated by studying things cross-departmentally, interdisciplinary. Like I wasn't just studying physics and engineering, but I wanted to study mysticism and the accounts of mystics and psychology, Western psychology, and even compared to Western religions. You know, you can get material from almost every subject and try to start weaving it together in a tantric way. Find out what works and what patterns are similar. I think Gebser said we should try to develop a multi-domain perspective. Try to find new connections from which new understanding might emerge.
And this is why I'm so excited about your book, Tantric Psychophysics. Is it, can people download it? I don't know if it's in hard form yet.
Well, okay, here's the thing, I have to confess. Right now, it is available on Amazon, but I'm probably gonna pull it in a few weeks or a month because the publication, the publisher Inner Traditions has picked it up. They want to publish.
Oh, so it'll come out at some point. But so in the meantime, let me promote a book that they can get ongoingly, Developing Supersensible Perception. And I think that really can help people find their way, and then they'll be ready for your next book that comes out.
Yeah, they can see probably some of my other books on my website, shellyjoy.net, shellyjoy.net. That has a lot of my paintings and essays and actually a lot of recordings of some of the interviews, even some of yours, I guess.
Oh, good.
I hope so. You don't mind.
Shelly, it's so awesome to talk with you, and we're going to do more, of course. I love this understandings that you help us discover. And I think all of our audience can now appreciate that they are also with us as psychonauts. I love that word, psychonauts.
Yeah, I'm a psychonaut. You're a psychonaut.
Jeez. And so thanks for being on Energy Stew. It's great. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org. I'd love to hear from you, and thanks so much for listening.